Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Ryan Dunn.
And I'm Steve Marks.
And in this episode, we have some great news to share with you around some of the events at MIX, some of the new samples that we've seen this week. And in addition, we're going to be covering how to use the Service Bus to troubleshoot some of your running applications in Windows Azure.
Then we'll finish up with a tip, which is about adding other files to your project, especially if you have a lot of files that you need to add to your project. So stick around for that. You may have noticed that we've switched sides here. We're trying this out. We did a focus group, and we found
That's
that 4 out of our 5 viewers preferred it
Yep.
this way. So we're doing that.
We're going to give it a try this week and see if it works.
So we'll see how
the
it goes.
Feng, was it Shui you said?
Feng, yeah, I think that's how it's pronounced.
The Feng Shui.
Feng Shui.
If that works better for
We've got the energizer.
Right. And as always, you can, if you're more than one of the 5 viewers, you can interact with us at Cloud Cover Show on Twitter. We always take your comments very seriously and address whatever your concerns are via Twitter or email if you email Steve.
Yeah, you can email me.
So for news this week, at MIX, we actually had some big announcements come up, which in this case were around SQL Azure and the Windows Azure Platform App Fabric Service Bus and Access Control Services. A little bit of a mouthful. SQL Azure and the App Fabric team actually announced support for a Labs environment. Now, as part of this, the SQL Azure team is going to have MARS support, which is the multiple active result sets, which is obviously kind of important for a few of the applications for things like PHP drivers and other things that assume that capability is there. 50 gigabyte databases, new SKU, so if you need more than 10 gigs, the 50 gigabytes coming up. And as well, a big request, spatial data support in SQL Azure. Now, you can get, if you sign up in the Labs environment, you can get access to those now. The App Fabric team, they are releasing a couple new features into the Labs environment. Among these are Silverlight support. So you'll be able to have cross-domain calls using the service bus, which is a big feature I know a lot of folks want to integrate with. Yeah. In addition, multicast messages with the message buffers. So again, a way to send messages using that kind of that buffer kind of queue-like capability to preserve and have some reliability of delivery of those messages. Now, in addition to this, Mr. Cloudy in Seattle, as we like to call him, the infamous Jim Nakashima, has once again wowed us with his blog by showing the complete session of videos, or the complete list of videos at MIX, and at one handy reference. So if you want to go and get all of your keynote and your MIX videos in one place, head out to Jim's blog, and he has them all linked up for you there. Personally, I've actually bookmarked this page, so if I need a quick way to go watch Steve's video over and over and over again, I've found that this is one of the best ways to do that.
It's good. Glad to hear you're doing that, Ryan. A couple other things that I wanted to point out because I saw these, and these actually relate a little bit to our feature from 2 weeks ago.
Right.
From, what is that, episode 3, 4?
5.
Five was 2 weeks ago?
Four
was 2 weeks ago, where we talked about input endpoints in worker roles, and so we talked about hosting other kind of web servers.
Right.
Well, Martin here has gone beyond that and said, the heck with web stuff, let's do FTP. And so, you know, instead of hosting a web server, he's actually hosting FTP in there to let FTP clients connect up through blob storage. So kind of cool. He hasn't released the code, which we're all deeply disappointed about, and hopefully everyone will apply some pressure on him to get that released. But he does have a sample app running there, so you can actually use it. So you can use FTP against your blob storage, which is kind of cool.
I'm not really as disappointed in the fact that he didn't release the code as much as it was FTP. I would have preferred like a Gopher or a Ping or Finger.
Mm-hmm. Archie?
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
All right. So moving right along, here is, though, another thing running in Windows Azure that is just a web server. This is Jetty. So for those of you who are doing Java stuff on top of Windows Azure, you know that we have the Tomcat solution accelerator, which helps people who are using Apache Tomcat to host their Java servlets in the cloud. Well, Jetty is another server for doing this. And so there's this little blog post here that from David, who you should check out his blog and read this and see how to do it. It was actually pretty easy, and it looks remarkably like what we showed two episodes ago.
And again, we'll have all these links on the post that accompanies this video, so don't try to strain your eyes too much reading the URL.
Exactly.
Other news, this has been around the Twitter sphere, I suppose is the word, or the series of tubes.
Twitterverse.
Yeah, the series of tubes that carry the Twitter messages.
Yeah.
The Windows Azure Toolkit for Facebook. This was actually built by the same guys who built the PDC demonstration that we saw around the Facebook Connect for Outback Steakhouse, where there was a kind of an offer for a blooming onion, and it was this application you would sign up and you would spam your friends with. No, I'm just kidding. And anyhow, you would go out and you would get a free blooming onion. Anyhow, the work that they did, they kind of codified this and turned it into a toolkit, and now you can go out and create Facebook widgets and other things in Windows Azure, which makes perfect sense since Facebook, in its very nature, if you could get lots of friends and you could get this thing passed around, and it could very well go viral, so it seems to be a pretty
good
platform.
I've never had lots of friends on Facebook. I don't know how you do that, but in theory, it's possible, I guess. So that's cool. Check that out. That is on CodePlex. Something else on CodePlex that got announced by our friends from LOCAD. Mm-hmm. And LOCAD, that name has probably come up before. People have heard of them as one of our customers on Windows Azure who are using really a whole lot of resources in the cloud to do some really complicated math that I don't understand at all in forecasting. So these guys predict the future on Windows Azure. And they've built a bunch of stuff for their own use. It's a magic 8-ball. You shake it, and then it says, ask again later.
It could be.
So LOCAD has been building these things for their internal use. So they've been building a bunch of libraries to do things like make it easier to set up queues or to do strong typing on top of blobs. I thought that's really cool. They decided for some reasons, and you can read more about what they've done, that blobs are actually a decent way to store serialized objects. Mm-hmm. And they've built some tooling around getting strongly typed objects back from reading blobs, and that by itself is kind of cool. They've got some other things in here. They have sort of an auto scale built on Windows Azure. This is something people ask about often. How do I make this work? They have one take on it here. They've also got something on horizontal partitioning and basically automatically rigging up queues to methods. And instead of writing that loop yourself that iterates over all the queues you're monitoring and does work in the right order and things, they basically let you write a little class, decorate it with some attributes to say what queue you're listening on, and they do all the plumbing. And so they call you and let you kind of pass
things
around.
Sounds like a pretty fantastic toolkit from some guys who really know their way around.
They definitely know their
stuff. Storage and cloud. I mean, just the thing that catches my eye here and comes up a lot is the task scheduler.
That's right.
I haven't tried this one myself.
They're doing MapReduce also, which is another thing that people ask about.
And this is all free. So that's the amazing thing.
Goodness of their hearts.
The code comes up here, and take a look, check it out. It sounds really fantastic. We also have Mr. Identity himself has released an update. For those of you who don't know who that is, it's this gentleman here. We can highlight his picture with the hair. He's very distinctive.
It's hard to miss Vittorio.
Hard to miss Vittorio. He has released a new training kit for Windows Identity Foundation and WCF on Windows Azure. So the scenario here is a lot of developers want to integrate identity from their on-premises assets like Active Directory into their cloud applications. And Vittorio's essentially built a kit that will walk you step by step on how to do this. Very easy to do, samples in there, a wonderful kit. So if that fits your scenario, I'd go out and check this out.
Very cool.
All right. Now, that brings us to the feature this week, which, as I had mentioned earlier, is actually using the service bus. Before we get into this, it's probably good to set a little bit of context around what the service bus is, especially for folks who have never heard of the service bus before. So to do that, I will diagram this. Now, I like to think of the service bus as an easy way to connect services within the cloud or within on-premises. So it can be used cloud to on-premises, it can be used on-premises to on-premises, or it can be used cloud to cloud. There's really no specific boundary that we can think of. And in fact, it's even more flexible than that. It could be really any cloud or any cloud that runs .NET code in most cases. that can connect and use the service bus. So if we look at the service bus as something like this tube here, which is not just the tube of the internet, which I know a lot of people think of, but if we think of the service bus as this tube up here, we have services that live on premises today, and we have services perhaps running up in the cloud somewhere. What you can do if you wanted to connect these services, and you imagine that this service or this client is behind a firewall, what you can do is you can actually register the service on the service bus. And what we've done is we've said, look, most people are only blocked for incoming connections. Outgoing connections are actually not blocked. So if you think about it, what we could do is project this service out on the service bus at a stable endpoint, and then consumers of the service, i.e. users and their laptop somewhere. Does that look like a laptop?
Looks good to me.
Looks pretty good. Users of the service can actually come up and communicate here. And what will happen is, if this guy's like in a Wi-Fi network at his local hotel or a Starbucks or something like that, when he's connecting to this service, which might in fact be behind a firewall in the on-premises data center, the connection is going to be routed and it's actually going to be relayed. It does even more than that, however. If this was a point-to-point service and perhaps you were sending video or larger binary content or something that's not exactly message-based, you might actually want to do this, or I suppose even message-based it would work, but you might want to actually connect directly. There will be an attempt made in some scenarios to actually mediate this connection and eventually snap it to a direct connection. And that's a very powerful feature of the service bus. So you can imagine that you start out this connection using the relay, and then at some point you discover that, in fact, you can connect directly. The service bus will mediate that for you, snap those two connections together, and you'll have a much higher bandwidth and throughput in that scenario. Now, as I said, this could be a service that's running on-premises, or in the case of like Windows Azure, you can actually have this service exposed up in the cloud. You can then register the service on the service bus again. So you imagine as you were just projecting it out there, and your clients again running from anywhere on premises or off can connect to the service very securely and very easily using a well-known cloud endpoint. Now I've kind of set the context of what we're doing here with the service bus. I wanted to show you one novel use that we have for the service bus. In context of how we debug our applications or can debug our applications in Windows Azure. Now the demo I have here right now is actually an application that I had written some time ago called Fluffy Photos, and it's been adopted and used many times in, through the various iterations of the SDK and different platforms and whatnot. And the reason it's called Fluffy Photos is because I believe fluffy is the word for photo in Spanish, or maybe it was photos. I have to ask someone that. No. Okay. Anyhow, the service I have here is a simple photo sharing application, and it looks a little bit like this. I have photos on this machine or up in the cloud, and I can select these photos, obviously, and take a look at them. And you'll notice I'm pulling them in some cases like directly out of blob storage. So it's an easy way to share it. The demonstration here is a web role, a worker role that does some thumbnailing, does some metadata, does some image cleanup, that kind of thing. Now, when I do this, I might in fact want to search on things. I can actually search for everything that's a desert, or I can search for everything that was taken on vacation, and I'll get these particular pictures returned. Now let's suppose that at some point something goes wrong in my application. I don't know what it is. I have an error somewhere. As a developer, I can certainly use the infrastructure that we already provide in Windows Azure, which is the diagnostic monitor capability. Very capable infrastructure. It's meant to be scaled out across many, many, many nodes and give you an easy way to get that diagnostic information that you require, like performance counters or event logs or logging files or IIS logs, to collect those locally and then transfer them into blob storage, so you'll be able to take a look at them offline and figure out what happened after the fact. Now, in this scenario, I'm actually interested in a version of this running perhaps in the cloud in a very specific development time frame. So I don't have a lot of instances, perhaps. I'm just really troubleshooting an issue that came up, and this is maybe my dev environment. What I can do is I can take a sample that we have in the SDK called the trace listener, which all it is a trace listener here that knows how to connect to the service bus. See if I can show this here in a little more bigger window. So this trace listener is something that you fit into your system diagnostic trace listeners, just a standard trace listener. But what it does in this scenario is it knows how to connect out to the service bus and actually publish these messages that are happening over the service bus. You'll see here this is a net event relay binding, so we're kind of doing a multicast message out. And then we have a simple implementation of the trace listener itself, so the different write overloads. Now, when this is used, I simply register this to my particular worker role in this case, and I do that through the standard app.config way that you might use in other settings. So here you see I have not only the Windows Azure Diagnostics Trace Listener, but I've also added this Cloud Trace Listener, which is the sample that I just showed you. Once this has been added, I simply run it, and then all I need to do is connect up a service that is also listening on that. In this case, we have a sample client or console that you can launch yourself. So here I'm going to do that. I've brought it up. Just going to start this trace console. What it's going to do is take a few seconds out to connect out to the service bus, establish that, and figure out who's talking to who. And you'll see that it says I've connected now to dunreed.servicebus, windows.net, and we're pointing to a common endpoint. At this point, if I do some behavior in the application, so I'll bring this up, and perhaps I want to, as an administrator, I don't like these albums. I want to troubleshoot what's happening when I actually delete something. I can come in and just go ahead and delete this album and delete this album. When I show that trace listener, I expect to actually be notified of this if I've instrumented my code, which in fact I have. And the only thing that I've done in here, just to show you, there's no magic trick to this, is if you look in the worker role where this method is, if I wanted to actually clean up album, in this case delete something, you'll see I'm just using the standard trace information. I haven't done anything special here. I'm not calling out to the service bus. I'm not writing it in a special location. I'm just saying trace this message. And the simple fact that I've registered that trace listener and it happens to be publishing over the service bus enables a scenario. And you can imagine if this is running out in the cloud, it's going to work just fine because, as I mentioned previously, even behind firewalls, I'm sitting here on a Wi-Fi network at Microsoft. I am NATed. I have absolutely no direct connection to the internet, and yet a role that's running in its own network up in Windows Azure is able to speak directly to me and tell me what's happening in more or less real time. Very powerful feature, one of the many uses of the service bus. And if you're interested more, I'd actually recommend to go check out the talks we had at MIX or at PDC 2009. In those talks that Clemens Vaster has actually delivered them, you can learn just a whole bunch more about the scenarios as they're appropriate for you in the service bus.
And where do people get this code? This is actually just based on some code that's out there.
Yeah.
Is it an SDK sample, or is it part of the...
So if you want the trace listener, which I think most people want, it's simply in the SDK. You can download the Windows Azure Platform App Fabric SDK 1.0 and look in the samples directory, and you'll see a Cloud Trace Listener.
I see. So then people can just plug that in, whatever they've got, and just
plug it in
right out to the trace.
Exactly. In this case, cool. I just took a sample that I had already previously instrumented with trace information, and that way I was able to see something a little more real world than like throwing up a Hello World service.
Right.
It was actually doing a number of things.
Very cool.
So
That's it
for the feature. It's time for the tip of the week.
Frankly, I think most people who tune into this show, most of the five who tune into this show, are just waiting for tip of the week. And so I thought what would be appropriate for this week's tip of the week is if we saw a picture of and the sound of our five viewers cheering for the tip of the week. So that's what I'd like to see now as we turn it over to the tip of the week.
Here it is.
I sure hope that was something flattering. And so for this tip, let's open up Visual Studio 2010. So I don't know why Ryan was on the old 2008 for his demo, but I'm hip and I'm with it. So I'm Visual Studio 2010 RC.
Equal opportunity.
Equal opportunity, that's good. And what I thought I would show people for this tip of the week is just, you know, we actually did it when we 2 weeks ago when we did the Mongoose thing. We actually had a directory that had Mongoose in it, and it had index.html, and that was it.
Yeah.
In real life, often when you're including some external project or some third-party program, you've got a whole directory full of stuff. And it, in particular, when I've been doing Java stuff, I've ended up having the entire Java runtime environment,
right.
Or maybe a copy of Tomcat or something like that that's in a directory that's getting packaged up. And this can be a pain to do inside Visual Studio when you're editing your project, because you've got to go add those all, you know, include those in the project and add sort of the whole full list of files. And that's what I did last week when we did the, or 2 weeks ago when we did the Mongoose demo,
right.
Is I just sort of manually added those things. But there's a handy way to do it. I'll grab
You'll
and
drive.
Steer here for this.
All right.
For this one. Yeah. So this is the project as it is, right? And we've got index.html and Mongoose 2.8. And if you look at the properties, they are set to copy always, so always copy the output directory. And this is how they end up in the package that gets deployed to Windows Azure. What I'm going to show is a way to just include a full directory and all the subdirectories without having to go manually add these one at a time. So I'm going to do this little trick. I'm going to unload my worker role project, and then I'm going to edit the csproj file. And in there, if we sort of hunt down here, we're going to see this little group here. And these are the lines that are basically adding those individual files. And they say copy to output directory is always. So what I'm going to do instead is, instead of naming a specific file, I'm going to use two asterisks, which basically says recurse down, you know, into any subdirectory as deep as it goes. And then I'm going to say any file that you find in there. So this all-inclusive thing just basically says anything under Mongoose I want to include in my project, and I want to always copy it to the output directory.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we don't need the second one because it's already covered by the first one. So that's it. You just save that project file and then go reload the project. And when you do, look, nothing changed. Index.html, Mongoose 2.8, they're still set to copy always. But let's go add something else. So if we just go to the folder, so I'm not adding this through Visual Studio, I'm just adding it to the folder. And I'm just going to create a new text document called foo.txt, as all good text documents are called.
Mm-hmm. That's where I keep my bank account info.
And then, hey, look, nothing happened. It didn't show up in here. What you have to do to get your view to look right here, and in fact to get the build to work, I think, you need to go reload the project, and at that point you see foo.txt, and notice it's set to copy always. So you never again have to go add an individual file. You could copy in a whole directory structure
right.
here, and it would always work. So if you're one of those people who's running some third-party thing or some you know, something where you've got a bunch of libraries or
right.
files, if you're doing even PHP,
PHP
and you copy it in there,
and
you're not using the Eclipse tooling or the cool new command line version of that that they released in Mix, if you're not doing that, then you've got to do it in Visual Studio, and this is by far the easiest way. This will save you a bunch of time. So I hope everybody does that. And I think that takes us to the end of the show. Did we cover everything we were supposed to?
I believe we did.
I always have doubts at this point of the show because sometimes we forget things. But
well, if we did, we'll get to it next week.
And if we forgot something that you know of, you can always send us a message at CloudCoverShow on Twitter, and we will get back to you, and we will put that stuff on the show.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.